Genome science will have a real impact on all our lives, and even more, on the lives of our children. It will revolutionize the diagnosis, prevention, and treatment of most, if not all, human diseases.
That was President Clinton on June 26, 2000, introducing the first draft of the Human Genome Map. He talked about real impacts on all of our lives. But here we are today on the 10th anniversary, and the press is asking, what has really been accomplished in these 10 years? Where are the wonder drugs? Where are the cancer cures? The New York Times headlines last week included, awaiting the genome payoff, and a decade later, genetic map yields few new cures. Well, President Clinton said genome science would lead to the treatment of most, if not all, human diseases. Big words. But here we are, 10 years and billions of dollars later, wondering, has human health truly benefited from the sequencing of the human genome? And with us to discuss this is Catherine Harmon, an online reporter for Scientific American. Hi, Catherine. Welcome to WNYC.
Hi. Thanks for having me.
You know, our reaction in my office was pretty much, wait a minute, what are we expecting out of 10 years of work? Are we expecting 53 miracle cures?
I think so, and unfortunately, especially in the popular press and popular imagination, we thought, you know, now that we have this code, we can just dive in and see where the specific variations are that are causing these common diseases. But in reality, you know, it takes a very long time to get to the point from finding a variation to actually developing a treatment. And 10 years is a pretty short time in the research world.
So, listeners, we can take a few quick calls on that. This, we don't know exactly when President Obama is going to speak. He says 11:35 officially. Sometimes they happen on time, these things. Sometimes they don't. But that would be just 8 minutes from now. But does anybody think that the existence of the Human Genome Map has had an effect on you, or any scientists listening who want to talk about how it's having an effect on your work and how you think it will have an effect on humanity? Anyone listening who's gotten those 23andMe personal genome maps made or anything like those? 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692 at the 10th anniversary this week of the introduction of the first draft of the Human Genome Map, 212-433-9692, as we are with Catherine Harmon from Scientific American. Do you think 10 years ago the science community jumped the gun by promising us great advances, or was this a media failure or a public perception failure of expecting too much without understanding the complexity of research?
Well, I think perhaps it was a bit of all three, and I've spoken with some people who say that, yes, you know, perhaps the researchers and those involved did kind of overpromise what was going to happen. But I think there was also really great optimism when that was first being announced, when the first draft came out in 2002, and then when it was pretty much completed in 2003. But I think the key there in President Clinton's speech was the lives of our children, and I think that's what people are really starting to realize, is that perhaps the human genome really won't have a meaningful clinical or medical impact until really the next generation comes along, and is perhaps there are a lot more sequences out there and a lot more, a broader population has been sequenced, and we can really start pinpointing these very, what turn out to be pretty rare variations in the population.
I guess a stat that scientists use is that it takes more than 15 years from a discovery in a lab for something to become a marketed drug because of stiff testing requirements by the FDA and other things. For example, the cystic fibrosis gene was found in 1989, but we still don't have a cure or an aggressive therapy.
Right, exactly. That's one of the prime examples of that. And then when you think about all of the diseases that we're still struggling to even find the genetic connections and narrow them down, we don't even have those really baseline laboratory results yet to start building therapies off of. So it really is kind of, we're in it for the long haul, but just having the foundation there allows a lot more research to be done and some pretty exciting work in the meantime.
Marcia in Flemington, you're on WNYC. Hi, Marcia.
Yeah, it's Melissa. How are you?
I'm sorry. Thank you for calling, Melissa. Good.
Yeah, my son is about three, and he was born with an undiagnosed genetic condition. And about every 6 months, a better genetic test comes along. And we still don't know what he has, but I think that's due to the Human Genome Project.
Can you be more specific? Because it's interesting, you know, if you don't want to, you know, if there's a privacy issue here, that's fine. But when you say an undiagnosed genetic condition and a better genetic test comes along every 6 months or so, what are you looking for? What do you think you're looking for?
We don't know. And we've gone through some of the best doctors in the country. He basically has a neuromuscular condition that's not neuro or muscular. His muscles don't work, but cognitively, he's totally fine. Mm-hmm. And, you know, he's been tested for SMA, which is spinal muscle atrophy, and there's very extensive gene sequence tests for that. And every time we go to a geneticist, they say every 6 months there's a cheaper test and a test that might narrow down a specific disease.
Why do you think it's genetic as opposed to some other cause?
They don't know, but the only other cause could be some kind of exposure cause, and there really wasn't. He wasn't preterm or anything along those lines. It was a normal pregnancy. So they really think, my mother has MS, my husband's family has some other issues. They really think it's genetic.
All right. Well, good luck, and I hope science progresses to the point where you can figure it out and do something about it. Thank you.
I do, too. I think the Human Genome Project's doing a great job.
Thank you. Joe in Flushing, you're on WNYC. Hi, Joe.
Hi. You know what? I've made maps in my life as a living, and it occurs to me that the Human Genome Project is like a map that goes out into a wilderness, and the benefit of that map is not apparent immediately, just like Lewis and Clark, when they explored the country and brought back a map. It wasn't until subsequent generations that that information became useful. And I think that's the way we look at this,
mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a good,
from a pure research point of view to begin with.
It's a good analogy.
That's a good perspective.
And Catherine, we're focusing on what we haven't gotten from genome mapping, but are there particular advancements or medications or treatments that you can point to and say that we probably wouldn't have found it without the Genome Project?
Well, I think a lot of things have been helped along by the advances with the Genome Project, but, you know, there is still just so much in the research pipeline right now that hasn't, you know, finished all of its clinical trial steps or hasn't been approved by the FDA yet. But I think it is important to note this idea of the map and the idea that there's so many little areas of the genome that we still don't even have mapped. It's not, you know, we call it complete, but it's still, we're still not exactly sure if we've gotten every area totally covered yet. And just kind of finding these little nooks and crannies and getting them on the map is really crucial before we can start even exploring them and start trying to figure out what their significance might be in developing new treatments for diseases.
We have all this information from 10 years of research, and we'll continue to gather more and more data. But do we have the capability to process and apply it all? Like, I've read the stat that genomes can be sequenced 50,000 times faster today, mm-hmm. than 10 years ago. But I don't even know what that means. Is faster better?
Right. Well, faster, as far as I'm concerned, it seems like faster is better. And I think that's kind of one of the good surprises that has come out of the last 10 years is when people first started to think about sequencing the genome, just doing a single genome was almost incomprehensible. And it took, you know, I think $500 million for the first full genome to be sequenced. But now, you know, we can sequence them relatively quickly, and some companies will sequence your genome for about $40,000 these days. But the price continues to lower, and as it does, more and more research can be done, and getting broader populations studied and having their whole genomes mapped is really key to finding these small variations.
We're talking about the Human Genome Map, which turns 10 years old this week, with Catherine Harmon, online reporter for Scientific American. And we are awaiting President Obama's statement on the fate of General Stanley McChrystal, which we are expecting any minute. As soon as the president appears, we will go live to the White House. But in the meantime, Trin in Park Slope. Trin, you're on WNYC.
Hi, this is Trin.
Hey. Go ahead.
My interest is in epigenetics because I have MS. I have the gene for MS. I had mono when I was in college, and I had a significant stressor experience when I was in my 40s, and the MS appeared shortly after that.
And so you're talking about the idea of epigenetics, which is the interaction between environment and genes?
Yes.
Thank you. And I think that's, is that controversial, Catherine, or don't we say that for many things, in order for the genes to be expressed, like a gene for certain diseases, mm-hmm. there have to be enough environmental triggers to turn it into a real factor for somebody's life. So in right. some cases, that won't be the case. If you have the gene for something, it will just mm-hmm. happen no matter what. In some cases, you might have a gene or a combination of genes that makes you more susceptible to diabetes, mm-hmm. but you'll only get diabetes if you know, eat in a certain way over many years, something like that.
Right. And the whole field of epigenetics has just thrown another layer of complexity on the human genome and the study of these diseases, which, you know, is definitely looking to be more of a factor. Researchers are thinking now that some of the genetic connections aren't quite as clear as they had originally thought. And yes, an epigenetics can change the way a gene expresses based on, as you said, environmental factors such as diet. And then it can actually get passed down to the next generation. So it's just a whole other level of complexity that's taking a lot more work and focus.
Huh? Does that mean that certain environmental exposures or behaviors can actually affect your gene for mm-hmm. the way you pass it to your kids?
Right, exactly. And it can affect the way the gene behaves in the body. But again, this is really, you know, this field of research still has a long way to go, I think, until a lot of really precise, confirmed connections can be drawn.
Is that just a very speeded up form of evolution?
I don't know if I would call it that exactly, but, you know, to a certain extent, every little variation that we have, you know, each person has about 1% of their genome is different, has these little variations in it. So in that respect, I suppose everything is changing the way we pass down our genes to our children. But
Chris in New Rochelle, you're on WNYC. Hi, Chris.
Hey. Yes. This project has really helped me. I was diagnosed with acute myelogenous leukemia about 2.5 years ago, and they were able to really specify the group that I'm in. It put me into a prognostic group that allowed them to target treatment for my leukemia in a way that wasn't quite as severe as it might have otherwise been. I would have been a candidate for a bone marrow transplant, but because of the prognostic group I fell into, because of their knowledge of the inversion on the chromosome that I have, they were able to sort of dial in the treatment more specifically. And not only that, now that I'm in remission, thankfully, they're able to test my bone marrow every 3 months and my peripheral blood for this particular cell inversion, and if they do find that, I'm able to get the help I need more quickly. So it's had a very meaningful effect on my life.
Good story. Thank you very much, Chris. As we're hearing from people for whom the human genome map completed 10 years ago, at least the modern current draft of it, has had a personal effect. Chris is one person for whom it had. Gail in Fairlawn, I think, is another. Hi, Gail. You're on WNYC.
Hi, Brian. I got really upset when I saw that article in the New York Times and sent a letter to the editor because without DNA testing, I would never have found out that I had Parkinson's disease because I've had multiple sclerosis since 1977, and it must be very unusual to have both of those conditions.
Uh-huh.
And there are some shared symptoms like tremors, and it would be difficult to tell one from the other without the DNA testing. And my brother had been diagnosed with PD a few years before, and his wife was a nurse. Tried to get me into research that they were doing. And I really resented it at first because I thought they've never been interested in MS in 30 years that I've had it, so why should I be interested in this? But I finally sent a saliva sample out to California. I've been in 3 research projects since. They did find out that I had ILRRK2 mutation from both of my parents. My brother and I, and possibly just one other person, are the only 3 people known to have gotten it from both parents.
Mm.
And so I was invited up to the Institute for Neurodegenerative Disorders in New Haven. I had a brain scan there, and it disclosed a dopamine deficit on the left side of my brain. And I hadn't started really having a lot of tremor in my right hand before that, but I have since, and so now I know what I have.
And is it useful information for you? In other words, one of the controversies about the individual genome testing that people can get is that if there's no treatment or behavior change that can improve somebody's quality of life by knowing that they have either a disease or the propensity for a disease, then all it does is cause them stress. In your case, is it better personally to know that that you have these genes?
I haven't seen a neurologist to get a definite diagnosis or treatment yet, but I'll know what my options are. And from what I read about Parkinson's treatments, they just minimize the symptoms and they have a lot of side effects, so that's good to know. But at least I'll be treated for the right disease.
Right. Gail, thank you very much.
You're welcome.
And these are these are great stories, Catherine. These are such, you know, they reveal the complexity.
Absolutely.
And they also reveal the personal usefulness of having the human genome map, even if it hasn't resulted in any miracle cures yet in its first 10 years.
Absolutely. It's nice to hear the side of it after talking to, you know, so many researchers in the field who are just trying to, you know, make these advances and move things along as quickly as possible. So it is wonderful to hear these individual stories.
Has the Human Genome Project also opened the door to more questions? It's answered some questions about biology. Has it also opened, kind of, you know, revealed new questions that people didn't think to ask?
Oh, it certainly has. And the farther we get in it, the more questions, of course, we have, because that's what science does. And it's been, you know, at one point people can get disheartened and think, well, it's been 10 years and we still don't have very many answers and it just looks more complex than ever. But on the other hand, that means that we are getting closer to figuring a lot of these things out and drawing these genetic connections with these diseases and hopefully finding treatment.
Has the Genome Project fundamentally or in any way changed the way that research is done?
I think, yes, indeed, and probably even more than it's changed medicine at this point, it has changed the way research is done. Now, even a lot of clinical studies that aren't necessarily testing for genetic variations or genetic diseases just kind of take a DNA sample from all of their subjects enrolled in the study just to have those on file. So, you know, even if they don't sequence the genomes then, they have the record of them to see perhaps if there is some genetic variation down the road that makes some person more susceptible to a certain condition or perhaps the medication will work better on them. And that's already kind of coming to fruition in some areas of medicine in which, you know, as one of the callers pointed out, you can tell if a medication will be more effective for you or a treatment might be better and less harmful.
So what's next? Can we expect certain advances in the near future? Or could we be asking these same questions, you know, like, oh, now it's been 20 years since the genome map and we still don't have any new drugs 10 years from now?
Well, I'm sure that there will still be a lot more questions, and I suppose the exciting thing about that is that we don't know what those questions are going to be 10 years from now. But I do think as sequencing gets faster and a ton cheaper, it will just be this wealth of information that we have about so many more people's genomes, their conditions, their health, their lifestyle, and just amassing all this data. Now, dealing with the data is a separate question. It's a lot to kind of sort through. Everybody calls it the proverbial haystack. But just having that data is really the key, and I think as we go forward in the next few years, that will really increase. And people hope, too, that once perhaps electronic medical records take off, there could be a link between, you know, say your personal genome scan that you've ordered and your electronic medical record, and researchers and even your own physician can kind of start to connect the dots.
And there we leave it with Catherine Harmon, online reporter for the Scientific American, as we talked about the human genome map at 10 years old and the kind of bad knock that it's been getting in the press. Like, what did anybody expect? 25 miracle cures in the first 10 years. So, Catherine, thanks a lot for joining us.
Thank you so much.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Coming up in a minute, we'll check in again on the White House and the visit this morning by General Stanley McChrystal. Is he about to be fired by President Obama? And guess who's a soccer aficionado? WNYC's John Schaefer, and he will throw in on the World Cup with the United States either about to advance or go home. Stay with us.